Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well, we do.
Here's John Williams.
Every single day, it's 109. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Went for a little walk today. Good grief.
Lord have mercy.
It's kind of dark. It's kind of hazy, kind of rainy. It's about 97 degrees. The current temperature in Chicago is 60-something, but good. Wow. Holy smokes. It's February. What will March be like? And April and May. You know, I was watching the Winter Olympics last night, not as closely as I normally do. And I thought, I wonder if the President of the United States is watching the Olympics. And wouldn't that be a good thing if he was just once in a while doing the sort of ordinary things that you and I do? I recently began posting my own fantasy President of the United States tweets. The first one earlier this week was, hashtag was this, watching hashtag Olympics, enjoying popcorn, soda, and family. And then there's a picture of a family watching the Olympics. Wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't you go, okay, all right then. Thumbs up. Now that would get a thumbs up from me. If the president tweeted, watching hashtag Olympics, enjoying popcorn, soda, and family.
I favorited that one.
Oh my gosh, how awesome would that be? Today I posted fantasy hashtag POTUS tweet number two. This is what I would like to see him tweet. Wow, Tiffany was in town and we just watched hashtag Black Panther. Might appoint at Chadwick Boseman, Secretary of Defense. Don't tell Mad Dog. MWGA exclamation point. LOL exclamation point. I hope you get it. MWGA. Who gets it? Who gets it? What does MWGA stand for? Anyone? Anyone? Making Wakanda great again. That would be like so. That'd be like an awesome tweet. That would be a thumbs up one.
I lost you on that one, but the first one seemed nice.
Wow, Tiffany was in town, and we just watched Black Panther. I might appoint the star as the Secretary of Defense. Don't tell Mad Dog. He's the guy that currently has that. MWGA, make Wakanda great again. That's where the movie is set. LOL, exclamation point.
No, I got it.
Oh.
I just
didn't think it was as awesome as I do, evidently.
The movie is set in Wakanda?
Yeah. Yeah. The
not our Wakanda.
Invasion of the Universe takes place in one of the northern suburbs. Different Wakanda.
I think we're all really confused at the moment.
Different Wakanda, different spelling, but Wakanda. So maybe this one isn't as awesome. Maybe my fantasy Trump tweets need to be clevered down just a notch.
Yeah, maybe you're too smart for us.
I don't think that's true. Wow, Tiffany was in town, and we just watched hashtag Black Panther. You get that. Might appoint at Chadwick Boseman. Don't you know he's the star? Secretary of Defense. Don't tell Mad Dog. MWGA, LOL.
I don't even think the president would get it.
Well, I don't think he would. That's kind of my point. I want him to just start doing some normal stuff. Sarah Sanders will be giving what I understand is the first White House press briefing now at 1:50 this afternoon since the Florida shooting. She's got a lot of explaining to do, not only what has happened and what the president's response has been. I very much like the Wall Street Journal story today in which they say that the president is talking to top Republican and Democrat senators about finding a better way to integrate the state's background checks into the federal background check. Evidently, that's supposed to happen. There's loopholes and cracks in the system. And the president, who's not a true Republican in the most traditional sense of the word, kind of, I think, doesn't care what the team's line is on this. That's one of the good things about Donald Trump is that you go, yeah, but that's not what the Republicans say. And then you go, yeah, but that might not be what he says. I mean, he's a loose cannon, and sometimes he might just fire in the correct direction or a direction different than what everybody else on the Republican right is doing. And so if you think, gee, how are we going to change gun laws in this country, you might have a better chance with Donald Trump than with Mitt Romney, say. There's my 24-cent analysis of that. So Sarah Sanders will have to address some of these issues, as well as the Jared Kushner story, as well as the fact that tomorrow The U.S. military is supposed to come out with better guidance on LGBTQs and transgenders in the military. Remember, the president put out a tweet that said that, and it was his sort of executive order. I think he signed an executive order saying that transgenders will no longer be allowed to serve in the military after consulting with my top generals. Well, the top general in the United States says, he didn't ask me. I found out about that via a tweet. That was in the news this morning. So does Sarah have something to say about that? The list goes on. We'll try and listen in on that at 1:30. When the fans at the Blackhawks game were chanting basketball, basketball, basketball at a opposing hockey player who was in the penalty box and is African-American, what was your first reaction? Oh, my God. Who are these people? The more I've thought about that, though, and we talked a little bit about public shaming yesterday, the more I don't know that a lot is accomplished by us finding out the identity of these guys. So while the Blackhawks, it sounds like, are doing all they're supposed to do, find out who they are, tell them that they'll never be at a Blackhawks game again. How they enforce that isn't clear. You can buy a general admission ticket. You don't have to, or a reserve seat. You don't have to notify the Blackhawks of who you are when you go to a hockey game. So how they're going to enforce that, I don't know. But I'm just going to allow the Blackhawks to say, trust us, whatever we can do to keep somebody like that from coming to the game, we will do that. And if it's not perfect, c'est la vie. But if it is, then enforce it with all your might. But the question I have is, should we find out? If, for instance, the Blackhawks know specifically who those four people are, they were chanting basketball, basketball, basketball at a black guy who is in the penalty box for the other team. If they know who those people are, should they out them? I really like Steve Rosenblum, who writes a sports column in the Chicago Tribune. I suppose you read him, too. And in it, he categorically today says, well, I want to know who they are. I'm not so sure that's all such a good idea. Particularly, imagine this. If the Blackhawks announce who these four guys are, and then something ill befalls them because now we can find them, how much responsibility will the Blackhawks have for outing them? If we go over to their house and beat them up, if we slash their tires, if we fire them, maybe they should, you know, if you're that guy's employer, but I'm not sure you should. But if something terrible happens to those people once they're outed, then does the Blackhawks organization have any responsibility for that? I'm not a lawyer, but you see where this can go.
And I'm sure it wasn't their proudest moment.
These four guys?
Right. So, I mean, has anyone ever made a mistake? Probably. Should they be held accountable to a certain degree? Yes. But should their, I mean, and their friends and family definitely know who they are. But that's should their boss know? Should
I'm surprised we haven't figured out who these guys are. They have friends. People around them recognize them on TV. Their friends, their colleagues, their enemies who know them know who they are. How has that not leaked out on social media or mainstream media? I'll bet we will find out.
But if you were their friends and family, would you want to stand up and say you know who they are?
That's why I threw in their enemies.
Right.
Rosenblum wrote, do we know their names yet? That was the first sentence of his article. Do we know the names of the four idiots who screamed racial taunts at Devontae Smith Pelly during the Blackhawks-Capitals game Saturday night? Do we know the names of the four despicable fans? We need to know their names. I do anyway. I want them outed. I believe that we should let them know how amusing it is for the rest of us when they are the ones being publicly humiliated. By the way, this is Black History Month. By the way, he wrote, this is NHL Hockey is for Everyone Month. Those four fans might disagree. Does it matter at all, too, that what they were chanting was the word basketball? I wasn't there, and I can't find any audio of what happened. But does it matter at all that what they were chanting was basketball as opposed to something else? I don't know the answer to that. You may have a different one than somebody else. Let's give them publicity, Rosenblum wrote, that they apparently desire from the big shot seats. Yeah, those people that are on the glass that are within earshot of the player in the box, those are expensive seats that you either paid dearly for or that somebody gave you who paid dearly for. But that's quite the privilege. That's quite the honor's not the right word, but boy, that's a good seat. That is one of the primo seats in all of Chicago sports. courtside at a Bulls game, not such a big deal right now. White Sox game, not right now. Cubs game, there's a bunch of seats that are swell seats. But glass seats and penalty box seats right there at a Blackhawks game, that may be the primo seat in the city.
Well, whoever did give them those tickets, not only do they have the option of not giving them again, but regret giving it to them.
So it sounds like you're not in favor of telling us who these guys are. If I had the name of them, if somebody calls Elif right now and says, hey, I know who they are. The guy works for my cousin.
I'd say...
Should we post that? Should we out them in the news?
I don't think so. I feel like even without knowing their name, you know exactly who they are and what they stand for.
I completely agree with that. I don't think our knowing who they are changes the story in any way, except that it gives us a direction to vent our outrage. And I'm not sure that that's a good thing. Boy, if you were their employer, what do you do? It's 119. Here's my phone number, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Call me right now or text to that number. I want to hear what you think or say on WGN. We're going to talk about that commercial in our 2 o'clock hour, plus two others that are out there. Just a quick reminder, Mike Madigan is not running for governor of Illinois. And it's kind of hard to keep track of who's who because everybody's calling other people out in these ads. That one's pretty specific, though, isn't it? We'll talk about a few of them in the 2 o'clock hour. It's 1:22, and now it's raining hard downtown Chicago on Michigan Avenue. Listen, there have been new charges made in the Mueller investigation. Steve Bertrand will have that news in about 7 minutes. Lots of texts. The first one to pour in, hey, John, these people embarrassed the whole city. They really did. They embarrassed the Blackhawks. They embarrassed Chicago. I don't know, somehow that reflects on this radio station. It reflects on all of us. People look at Chicago. Look, they already hate Blackhawks as it is out there. Let's not make it any worse. And somebody found a way to do that. But what do you do? Pam, you're on WGN. This is John. What did you want to say?
This is Jan. Is that who? Am I it?
You are on the air. As you called okay, to talk to me?
I did. My view is that people who, we could see them clearly. So if you know them, you know them. I mean, we don't have to have their names. And I thought that the Blackhawks from the top to the middle to the players to the fans, they all spoke eloquently about how well this was handled. I think the people that did it have to examine themselves now. We don't have to break their windows.
Thanks for the phone call. I'll go from you. Pam, thanks for joining us. To Murray, you're on WGN. Murray, what did you want to say?
You mean Bernie?
I'm sorry. Bernie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, John, King John. This is Bartman all over again, and I never thought that they should ever release his name. It was crazy what that kid went through for trying to catch a ball. And there was two other guys trying to catch the ball, and he took all the heat for everything and changed his life, turned it upside down. I heard he had to move to England for a while. And
Bartman was in, you're absolutely right. Bartman was doing what all the rest of us would do. Bartman's not a bad guy. He doesn't deserve anything that he got. Now, these people are different, but you're right. The question is, should we know about it? And I guess if you were going to say the Cubs told us who, or at least we found out who Steve Bartman is, shoot these bad mopes. If you're going to tell us who Bartman is, then we ought to know who these people are. What do you think about these people at the hockey game, though? Bernie, should we find out who they are?
It really doesn't matter. Like you say, people that know them, they know who them people are. And whether we know their name or not, I don't think it matters. I don't think the name should ever have been brought out on Bartman. That's what I said.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Yeah,
I thought it was terrible what they did to him. And I can see the same kind of thing. I shouldn't, you go to a hockey game, you probably had a couple of beers and you got stupid, but, I don't think there's any reason to ruin their lives because of it. I think they should be chastised, and kept out of the stadium and all of that, and they should be hanging their heads right now in shame. But.
Yeah, and you wonder if they are. Bernie, thanks for the phone call. This texter from 312 says, I'm sure those bigots were very proud of what they came up with. John, this texter says, what was racist in the basketball, basketball, basketball chant? Somebody else said, hey, they outed Bartman. A lot of you are recognizing that fact. From 773, maybe they have facial recognition software security cameras? Haven't heard that. John, they'll all be fired from their jobs. And this one says, it's just trash talk, and it is freedom of speech. From 815, how the hell is chanting basketball a racial issue? Now, I'm not going to try and make sense of those particular questions. If there's a black guy in the penalty box at an NHL game and you chant basketball at him, what are you chanting at him? WGN Radio, John Williams here. Still, a lot of you are saying, why is it such a calamity that those four fans, I understand two women, two men, at the Blackhawks game against the Capitals were chanting basketball at a black hockey player from the other team? Why was that so bad? What is so racist about somebody chanting basketball at that black guy in the penalty box? I could break it down step by step and point out to you probably what they were thinking and why they were saying that at that guy as opposed to another guy and why they picked that sport instead of a different sport, but I'm not going to take the time to do that. Some of you said this from the 630 area code. Whoever gave him those seats can be held responsible, and they will possibly have their season tickets revoked. Somebody else said, they know who owns those seats. Contact them. Tell them they can never have those seats again. It's over. 773 says, seems to me outing those people would be a deterrent to future idiots. Maybe so. And then this one is maybe the best one of all. It says, hey, John, how about we reach out to Devontae, the young man who was playing for the Capitals, that was the object of those chants, and show him how classy real Chicagoans and Blackhawks fans are, rather than give the ignorant even more attention. They get enough. What can we do positive about it? I said, Elif, let's go to the Capitals page and see what they have biographically about Devontae Smith-Pelly, and I don't see much there about an organization he works with, a charity that he's involved in. But you're right, if there's something we can do for him, them, or that, that would be the way to go. I'm not for outing these knuckleheads, just try and keep them off the damn hockey games or out of the hockey games, and that would be, I think, about all you could do. It's 138 on WGN Radio. So after the shooting in Florida, people are having all sorts of conversations, and one of them is this: how do you make the schools and school rooms safer, right? And there's a kid in Wisconsin who, in his high school shop class, developed a device that they can quickly slide under the door. If there's an emergency, if there's suddenly a live shooter, oh my God, what are we going to do? And everybody runs and hides. They say that the shooter could blast the lock or the handle off a door if he was intent on getting in. But if they slide this metal gadget under the door, it still wouldn't physically open. It holds it stuck. Think about that. That's not a bad idea. And the young man that invented that is Justin, I think it's Rivard. And he joins us now on WGN. Hey, Justin, this is John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Did I describe accurately where we are on this?
Yeah.
When did you come up with this idea? Before or after the Florida shooting?
This is a few months prior to this shooting. We had just adopted Alice training, and in the homeroom that I was in, we did a drill one day, and part of Alice training, they taught us to barricade the door with whatever you have. And in our room, we had these big heavy tables, and we thought, well, these will work perfectly because they're so heavy. And we placed them in front of the door, and, you know, thinking about what could happen during a school shooting, you know, they could shoot out the lock, or they could, you know, somehow disable the lock. Maybe we don't have time to lock the door. We put the table in front of the door with the door unlocked. And when that happened, we could open the door with ease. So being in that homeroom at the time, and, you know, you never know when things like these can happen. So we just kind of, me and my shop teacher, we kind of got together and we thought, well, how can we take what I'm learning and my set of skills to kind of fix this problem using welding and metal? And week by week, we kind of put it together, and, you know, we tested it out a few times, and, you know, there was failing in there. You know, sometimes things didn't work out, but in the end, when we got the final product, it holds like a brick wall when you put it under the door. So I'm very happy with how it's turned out. I'm very happy with hopefully the lives that it'll save when it is put into use in schools.
It's called Just In Case. Your name is Justin Rivard, and just in case there's some sort of active shooting, then they can use the Just In Case. Alice Training, what does that stand for?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Active live shooter, I think, right? Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And they, you know, a lot of schools are starting to adopt that program. And
how old are you?
Incorporate that into there. I am 17.
What year are you in school?
I'm a senior.
So we posted a picture of the device on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John there if you want to see what we're talking about. Let's just describe it a little bit. It's a thin metal plate that would slip under the door and then a couple of kickstands on either side. And if I was trying to push the door forward, those metal bars would keep it from going. It would get stuck, right?
Yes.
Are you confident that would work universally in all school doors and public settings like that?
Yes, because in most, or I shouldn't say in most, but in all modern schools that, you know, there are some schools that were made, you know, 1950 and prior that might have different door jams, but in every school they should have these standard door frames, just like they do in hospitals and college dorms, all of that, because they're just standard. They should all have these because of codes, certain codes that they have to follow.
So you built this one prototype in your shop class, and you finally got one that you liked, and you said this worked. Now you folks are manufacturing them and selling them to schools in Wisconsin and maybe the country. How and where are they being manufactured?
So right now, one of my friends in my grade, her dad started doing metal fabrication at his home shop, and you know, wanting to stay local. Obviously, I don't have enough orders to have a big scale manufacturer make them because I'm not getting orders of, you know, 5,000. He agreed to make them, and I thought, well, this is a good opportunity. You know, I'm helping him put food on the table, and he's also helping me, you know, get my devices made with quality and get them to schools as fast as they can, because as I started getting more and more orders, you know, the school year started and I didn't have time to make them because I manufactured all of them for the entire Somerset School District.
How many was that?
Roughly 190.
At $95 a piece?
I sold them to our school district for a little bit cheaper because I was just starting up, and they were very lenient with me with, you know, because obviously paying for materials was a big problem because of the startup. So they had helped me. They'd paid half up front to get the materials and everything made, and in time, once I delivered the rest of them, then, you know, the second half of the payment was given, and from that point on, I've been pretty much putting almost all the money back into the company to try and get materials built up and money for marketing.
Justin Rivard is on the phone. He is a senior in high school in Wisconsin and came up with a device that keeps doors from being opened in case there's an alert. Alice Training, we just looked it up, A-L-I-C-E, alert, lockdown, inform, counter, evacuate. That's the acronym that unfortunately schools have had to learn. And I saw an interview with your principal, and she has one there in her office, and she said, look, shoom, she pulled it out from underneath her desk, zoom, she just very quickly slid it under the door, and now that door is not able to be pushed open from the outside. Nobody can get in with that thing in the way. At least that's the idea. But I'm a little confused. Are you telling me, because when I watched her do it, and I'm looking at the device online right now, Justin, there's no way I could simply put a pencil or a ruler or something underneath the door and push that thing out of the way? You've slid it under the door from your side. What's to keep me from pushing it out on the other?
Okay, so the way that it works is the piece that holds the two plates out, it's a bigger tube and a smaller tube. They both fit inside of each other. So when you extend it, and the small tube will come out of the big tube, allowing it to extend to high school width doors or hospital width doors because they're a little bit bigger because they have to fit beds in there. And what locks it is I have a quarter 20 nut that is tack welded onto the pipe, and I have a threaded handle that goes into that nut, and as you tighten that threaded knob,
yeah,
it locks down on that small tube.
Okay, hold on a second. I got you, and I'm glad that you've got that figured out. Somebody said to me, we've got a couple of texters, and they're saying, but what if the door swings the other way? I'm describing it in a manner that would keep somebody from pushing the door open, but don't most doors swing out? What happens in that case?
Most doors do not swing out because it's a fire hazard. So if you do have a door that does swing out, sadly, my device does not work for that. I am currently working on a prototype for an outswing door that will hopefully be really soon. Hopefully, I can just kind of get the odds and ends put together with it. But
I got it.
If you're...
Hold on a second, Justin. This texter said, John, this is the perfect product for Shark Tank. Any one of those sharks would help him out. Have you guys thought about that? And has any investor approached you about this?
I have had local people approach me about investing, because right now my biggest obstacle is getting the utility patent for it, and filing it and paying a lawyer to work is, you know, it's not cheap.
Especially so, when you're 17. Do you have a job outside of school, and what has become this your job, your little company called Just In Case? Do you have any other sources of income?
Right now I do not, because of due to school and sports and athletics. I don't have time outside of school to do any kind of work.
I understand that you sold them not just to your school, but to other schools. How many total units have you sold so far?
Oh, got to make me do some head math. It's, let's see, our school district has about 190, and Grantsburg School District, which is just north of us, they ordered 54 for their elementary school and middle school, and a few weeks ago they had emailed me saying that they want another 40 for their high school. So... another 90 on top of the 190, so almost 300 in total.
Well, I wish you well. I'm sorry that there's a market for a product like this. I hope it works. I hope it's never used, but it strikes me as a good idea. And if it if at some point we determine that we don't need this, or we find another system for it, you know what I also really like, Justin, and what I know my audience is hearing right now, is a really intelligent, clear-minded, confident young man. And I got to tell you, since this shooting took place, the high school students across this country who have been rallying, who have been giving interviews to CBS and CNN and ABC, and who have been doing things like you're doing and speaking the way you're doing, this has just been a tragedy for the whole country. But I am renewed in my faith and confidence in young people by hearing people like you talk, Justin. This is really impressive what you're doing.
Thank you. I've had multiple people. I actually had somebody on Facebook who was a family friend of one of the victims of the Florida shooting. And, you know, being a student and knowing what kind of things can happen and never knowing when they are going to happen, it's pretty scary. And to hear the confidence in her voice saying how she wants these in their school, and she wants to help me as much as possible to get these in every school, because it's not just me now that believes in this product. You know, I've had hundreds of people email me now saying, you know, how great this product is.
How do they get it, Justin? How do people get this product? Do you have a website?
I do have a website. The website is called DominateSafety.com. There is it has all my news stories that have been filmed so far on there, and there's a contact form that you can fill out, which will be forwarded right to me. So right now I'm currently getting back to all the people that have emailed me with questions and requests for ordering.
Man, DominateSafety.com, just like it sounds, right? The word dominate, the word safety, no space, DominateSafety.com.
Yes.
All right, Justin. Good luck to you. My best to everybody over at the school there. You guys are just east of the Twin Cities. You're in western Wisconsin. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good luck to you, young man. Anything else we should know before we let you go?
Not that I can think of.
We have to get a shark behind this.
I know, I know.
Mark Cuban, if you're listening, you should tweet, DM Mark Cuban.
Except I'm not sure that I want Mark Cuban to have any of this. I want...
Well, he can help.
Maybe Justin can... Because really, I guess your costs are metal, welding goggles, you know, I...
Yeah, right now it's just paying for the materials, the paint and the labor.
Yeah.
Maybe soon it'll be paying for a work rate for per hour for a manufacturer.
Think about that. Here's a 17-year-old who came up with an idea and is now talking about employing other people and all of that sort of thing. Good for you, Justin. We'll be in touch. We'll continue to watch your story. DominateSafety.com if you or someone you know wants to look into this. Thank you, Justin. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Back to class now, young man. Take care.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
It is.
Here's John Williams.
Raining hard downtown Chicago. If this were snow, get out of town. We would be buried.
Lord have mercy.
And I'm trying to decide what I like better, this or that.
My drive in this morning?
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. 2.5 hours. But I thought it's okay, because on the way home, you'll get home quickly. It won't be raining anymore.
Good luck to you on that. So you were driving in a rain coming in this morning? Was that it?
It was raining early, and it was raining off and on. But
2.5 hours?
Yeah, I left, usually leave about 6:30, and I got in a few minutes after 9.
I got two words for you. Take the train.
Yeah.
Sometimes that doesn't work out either. We have some flooding on Metro.
2.5 hours. Dang.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's pouring right now. And I mean, so if we get... Is it true 10-1 is the ratio, inches of rain to inches of snow?
I don't know.
Let's say it is.
I don't think it's 10-1. I mean, just for you to come up with a stat, I'm going to say it's something else. But
you don't even know.
It's a lot to a little.
Can't you trust me? Can't you just love me?
Not on a number.
LF, you'll need to find out what is the ratio of rain to snow. X inches of rain equals how many inches of snow? I am 67%, 72% sure that it is 10-1. By the way, Elif's have been working on something else. Elif, if Louisville vacates their 2013 National Basketball Championship because of blah, 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 then who now is the national champion for 2013? Elif, what happened in 2013?
In 2013, the Louisville Cardinals beat the University of Michigan Wolverines 82-76.
All right, so now Michigan gets the trophy.
That's just what we need, more Michigan fans cheering.
poor little Michigan. God bless them. Huh?
According to NOAA, the 13 inches of snow equals 1 inch of rain.
And who's NOAA?
National Oceanic.
Who is this NOAA guy? I host a talk show.
The weather people. National Oceanic AA.
The National Oceanic Atmospheric
Administration yeah.
Team.
Look.
Scandal-free, by the way. Scandal-free.
So far.
Because no one's ever heard of them.
It is 212. This is WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. There is a book out called Off the Charts, and it is about child prodigies. It's just fascinating, the stories in this book. And for those of you that think your kid is gifted and talented and might be a prodigy, I almost hope for you that they are not. Ann Holbert wrote this book. And she joins us now on WGN. Ann, I'm John Williams. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I hope you don't mind coming on a show that is this free with the facts right now. Numbers are just flying left and right, and we're not sure of all of them.
That is totally fine with me.
What got you, were you a child prodigy yourself? What inspired you to look into this for a book?
No, I was not a child prodigy. I wrote another book, which was about a cultural history of child-rearing experts, and said lots of things about how we could raise our children so they would be better and better and more fulfilled in their potential. And I finished that book and sort of realized I'd written lots about grown-ups and lots about theory, but I hadn't really written that much about children and what amazing children can actually do. So I thought, we're living in a society in which we all kind of want to have proto-prodigies. It would be really interesting to go back and look at what particular children who'd stirred up interesting conversations and debates had actually done and what their lives were like.
But we're talking about a different class of kid entirely here. I mean, so my kid got A's in school, and somebody else's kid was in the gifted program at the local high school. But we're talking about kids that are, well, as your book says, off the charts. What are we talking about here when we talk about the young people that you wrote about?
Well, the ones I've written about vary a lot, and I've chosen them for sort of reasons that both relate to how great they are at what they do, from chess to music to computers to actually writing fiction as children.
Yeah, poetry,
Poetry, and had a novel published at 12, one of the girls I read about in the 1920s. But I'm also... I chose them partly because the realms in which they were particularly outstanding made people very interested in the times they were excelling. So these literary girls, for example, a poet I write about named Natalia Crane and a novelist named Barbara Follett, were busy doing their writing in the 20s when, in a sort of war-weary, jaded time, the idea that children had imaginations that were completely fresh and wonderful in ways that adults really couldn't match was enthralling to adults, and so
yeah,
there was a lot of attention paid to the what kids could do. And you don't usually think of child prodigies being in the realms of literature, but
yeah,
at that point, partly because of adult interest, these girls got a lot of attention, and lots of other girls started writing, and there was a sort of what was called an epidemic of creativity. So,
well, would you say that these prodigies, because you're right, you write about musicians, you write about Bobby Fischer. I'm so glad my eighth grade term paper was about Bobby Fischer. I didn't write a book about it, though. You know, but he always struck me as a brilliant, gifted, and tragic character. And I think that's one thing that is true about a lot of the young people you write about, is that I don't know that they were all happy, and I don't know that those were all happy households. But would you say that if I aspired for my kid to be an outlier, you know, to be something off the charts, is that something that I can instill in him, or are these kids just born with these traits?
Well, that is a subject on which their parents and promoters would disagree. You know, the first story I write about were two boys who got to Harvard before they were teenagers, and their fathers, who were Russian immigrants, proclaimed that anybody could turn their children into a Norbert Wiener, that was one of the boys, or a William James Sidis. Their view was, it's all in the brilliant teaching of the parents and in catching the children early, these pliable brains. At the same time, Henry Cowell, who grew up to be a great American musician, was growing up on the West Coast, and he had parents who believed that it was all completely innate, and his great musical genius was his alone, and he attracted the attention of a psychologist, Lewis Terman, who took that view, too. He was very much a hereditarian, so you will find in the different stories quite different views on this subject.
Well, I want to be delicate about this, but would you say that those kids who can do complex mathematical equations or understand physics at the age of four or invent a language or lecture at Harvard about the fourth dimension or write sophisticated, almost sensual poetry, you know, when they're single digits aged, would you say that those are people who are so different that it's almost diagnosable? It's almost like autism or Asperger's. These are people who, while we see their talents as a manifestation, it's a manifestation of something maybe wrong with them. I don't know that I put that nicely.
That's a very interesting question. And I think I came away from my cast of characters thinking that in some way, of course, simply being an outlier does mean you are in some way not normal. I would say, though, that in the case of some of the kids I write about, and in particular, I think, both of the literary girls, I actually think a large part of their exceptional nature was the product, not of express nurture. No one was trying to turn them into a poet or a novelist, but they had such conducive settings and adults around who were very interested in encouraging their talents that they ended up off the charts. I think, though, if they had gone to, at least if Barbara had gone to school, she was homeschooled in the end, I think she would have made a lot of friends and been a child who we might well not have said to ourselves,
yeah,
we need to diagnose her.
Was Bill Gates off the charts?
He was, as a child, you know, a real handful at school, a handful for his teachers, a handful for his parents, but he also had his core of friends, who were all in their own way kind of outliers together, which I think made a big difference. I think peer group associations do make a big difference for a child, not necessarily in making them conventional, but in giving them some of the sort of normalcy of a childhood that isn't a real loner outlier childhood.
Bill Gates is almost the outlier among outliers, right? Because some of these people don't have a practical application for their intelligence, and obviously Gates has. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's true. I mean, one of the interesting things I think about the computer moment and those prodigies is that, unlike most of the prodigies I write about before, these math and chess and literary prodigies, these kids were actually doing something that adults really didn't know much about. They were literally themselves leading the way and figuring out what the practical applications of this would be. They were not sort of matching adult prowess, which is what we usually think of when we think of prodigies, is they're doing something as kids that an adult can do. These kids were doing things that adults didn't know how to do. And I do think that's a big distinction.
I think it's also interesting, the timing of it. You know, if Bill Gates were born 50 years earlier, or 100 years earlier, or maybe even 20 years earlier, his genius would not have found at least that place to go.
I think that's absolutely right. One of the things I came away from this, the work on this book, thinking is how important sort of cultural moments are. I think you probably, the same thing is true, maybe you will disagree, about Bobby Fischer. You know, he got interested in chess at a moment when chess was really important,
yeah,
in a sort of global way that intensified his interest, that got other adults who in the chess world really interested in him, that meant that, you know, all kinds of issues that might have given people pause about Bobby Fischer didn't, because he seemed like such a great asset. So I do think cultural moments and historical sort of turning points play a big role in selecting out talent and what we recognize as talent.
We forget today what a big deal that was in 1972, when Bobby Fischer and Boris Spassky meet in Reykjavik, Iceland, and the conditions under which they would play, and who would be in the room, and would there be cameras, and what the temperature would be, and how many matches would be played, and what the playing chess. What could be more basic than that? But it was years in the planning, and finally they get them to play this chess match, and it was of such cultural consequence, as you point out. I mean, I don't know that I knew or remembered much of this, but you sure make it interesting, a chess match decades and decades later. But that was us versus the Soviet Union, Jack. That was a very tense moment. We were all looking for some sort of symbolism. So we were rooting for Bobby, and they were rooting for Boris. And Henry Kissinger is on the phone line with Bobby Fischer before the match starts, saying, "Now listen, whatever you do, don't like start World War XII, okay?" it was bizarre.
Well, and I think what was sort of interesting is to see how the contrast between the sort of American way of chess,
yeah,
and the Soviet way of chess kicked in even earlier when Bobby was learning. You know, he was patching together a kind of improvisatory way of learning chess in a country that, you know, didn't really have much of a chess establishment at that point at all,
mm-hmm,
versus Boris Spassky in Russia. You know, he went to the youth pavilions. He had a very clear-cut path with all kinds of national support, and it was extremely streamlined. And I think it made Americans kind of proud to think that they had this maverick boy who,
yeah,
was forging his own way that was really democratic and individualist, and then sort
an
of
American.
He was supposed to be, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, so hold on one second. Ann Hilbert's on a phone line. Her book is off the charts, and this is the best question of all. Mark on line one says, "So do prodigies top out early, or do they keep developing?" Anne. Answer that in a minute on WGN. We're wrapping up a conversation with Anne Hulbert. Her book is Off the Charts. She is the literary editor at The Atlantic. Her book is about these child prodigies. And one of our listeners has a question. Let's go ahead and put Mark on, too. Hey, Mark, you're on WGN. What was your question?
Yeah, is there a misconception or a stereotype about prodigies where they accomplish everything they can real early and then they just have to repackage their successes in new forms and essentially repeat them and be bored? Or does a prodigy create brand new frontiers and, you know, expand beyond what we've ever seen before all his life?
That is a really good question, and the answer is their prodigies do different things, but every prodigy does have a kind of crisis of purpose and direction in adolescence, where I think some of the answers to your questions come. Suddenly, what has been a kind of automatic and more early mastery of a skill then has to become a kind of self-aware, actual direction for the future in which critical and, you know, purposeful direction becomes much more important. Some prodigies find their way through that sort of, it's called a midlife crisis, because for them it really is almost the middle of their lives, come through it renewed. And Norbert Wiener, the founder of Cybernetics, went on to become, you know, a very creative man throughout his life and was not repackaging things. Shirley Temple, of course, ended up having to leave.
Yeah.
Different paths.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Shirley Temple's a great part of your story. Her vocabulary, her personality, her dance skills. I guess she was a prodigy, I guess, in that sense, huh?
Well, she was she would have been the first to say that she was not probably the best dancer or the best singer there had ever been, but she was this amazingly confident and sort of self-directed creature of a studio system that would have probably crushed anyone who wasn't as kind of self-directed and indomitable as she. She was a great learner, but she also really knew how to work with people, which in that line of work was absolutely crucial. And she also was someone who went on to not become a, you know, ever more creative movie star, but went on to become a diplomat. I suppose that's a different way that a prodigy's path can go. You can leave the field you were in and have a life of a very different sort on another trajectory.
Well,
they did that.
And it's fascinating because in the book you point out that Shirley Temple, as an actor, as a young lady, was always sort of accommodating or repairing things in her family. Her parents bled her finances dry, and she managed that. She managed the studio. She managed her life and career. Then what did you do with that extraordinary talent, if you will? Well, you become a diplomat. You become an ambassador to countries some people don't want to be ambassadors to. So there was a certain symmetry to her story there. The book is off the charts. Anne Hulbert, I'm out of time. It's fascinating to meet you. Thanks for doing the work and keep doing what you do. It's well done.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Those White House press conferences are a thing, aren't they? Those are a thing, aren't they?
She was going into her four corners offense there for when we were carrying it for a time.
I get paid a lot of money to come up with those kind of brilliant observations. Those White House press conferences, those are a thing, aren't they? That's something else, I'll tell you. Unlike anything I've ever seen. So they ask her a question. And, you know, really, sometimes they aren't questions. Here's basically how they go. Sarah. And then she calls on them. They go, the president sucks, right? I mean, the president is an idiot and he's a horrible person, right? And then, that's the basic question. And then Sarah then talks for about 45 minutes about various things.
Or sometimes she keeps it short and says, I'll let the president talk for himself.
Right, yeah.
That speaks for itself.
But there's not a lot of information. And it's like one time they said, okay, so the president says that if the FBI would stop investigating him so much, maybe they could have stopped the Florida shooting. What the hell, Sarah? And then Sarah said, well, here's what the president means. And then she tries to put a better spin on it. And and she comes to an entirely different conclusion than you and I did. And then she uses up a lot of oxygen. And then they move on to something else. I kind of wanted them to dwell on that point a little more. But for what reason, I don't know. She's not going to say, yeah, he shouldn't have said that. Or, yeah, that's idiotic. That's unfortunate. You're not going to get that. So that's just the way those things go.
But would you have gotten that from any press secretary?
No, but no president would have said that either. So, you know, you're right, Violetta. These are extraordinary times. And that's why I just said, what was my observation? Boy, that's something. Those press conferences are something. Sure are. Those sure are a thing. I'll tell you that. I think it's still going on.
Some bump stocks, and that we expect further action on that in the coming days. He ordered the Department of Justice and the ATF to review the regulation of bump stocks. My understanding is that review has been completed and movement will take place on that shortly. But the president, when it comes to that, is committed to ensuring that those devices I'm not going to get ahead of the announcement, but I can tell you that the president doesn't support the use of those accessories.
And on the broader problem of deranged individuals getting a hold of weapons and killing people indiscriminately, does he have any ideas on how to deal with this?
Well, look, we're having, again, that's part of a lot of the conversations that we're going to have over the next...
suggest he started from scratch
here. On mental illness.
If he has to listen to a bunch of people, he doesn't have any ideas of his own. That would suggest that he doesn't have any ideas.
It's not what I said.
And that's not a very good... That's exactly what I'm saying. See, so the president doesn't have an answer. Well, I don't know that any president does. I'm not sure what Donald Trump is supposed to do about it, except maybe be a little more anti-NRA, anti-Republican Party, which I think he kind of is. I'm telling you, I think you have a better chance of getting some reform with this guy than with Mitt Romney, because Romney and typical Republicans all circle their wagons the same way, and Donald Trump is not that. So I'm a little optimistic that maybe he'll be a bit of an outlier on this, and maybe some reform will take place. But if he doesn't have the solution, I'm not here to say, to beat Donald Trump up about it. What could he have done to prevent that shooting? Think about that seriously. What could he have done to, he could have done to prevent that shooting? I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. And so for him, for the press to beat him up, or Sarah Sanders right now, because he doesn't have a specific solution to it, like anybody does, I think just goes to show the divide between the media and the White House right now.
Individuals file. And secondly, I haven't spoken to the president about whether or not that would be necessary. But again, as I said, Mr. Kushner's work that he has done will not be impacted. He's going to continue to do the work that he's done over the last year.
Roberta. Has the president ever overruled the Personnel Security Office on a recommendation?
I'm not aware of any time that's happened. Roberta.
Former Speaker Gingrich has put forward a proposal that he's sort of promoting quite a bit, about training more teachers and administrators to use firearms and having more people with firearms in schools. I'm wondering if that's in the range of ideas that the president is open to, and if you can explain a little bit more about how the White House is going to run this process in terms of taking in ideas from everybody and having these listening sessions.
I haven't spoken with him about Speaker Gingrich's plan, so I'll have to get back to you on that front. Over the next several days and weeks, how we'll run that process is take in a lot of information from individuals that have been affected.
Sarah Sanders continues to take questions from the media. I'll take a couple calls from you. Cheryl, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks, King John. I just want to say I think it spoke volumes this weekend that he chose not to attend a funeral that was less than an hour away from where he was golfing. So I really don't expect anything. I don't expect anything from him anyway. But he's certainly not going to bite the hand that fed him. The NRA spent $30 million to get him elected. There's going to be no changes at all. I just don't have any high hopes. And the fact that he golfed instead of attending a funeral for one of those victims is just unconscionable to me. He has no soul. There's nothing decent about him. I'm sorry. I just can't even deal with that. If Obama would have golfed instead of attending a funeral, could you imagine the outcry from him?
You could do a version of that statement every single day. If Obama had done that instead of Trump, you imagine? You could do that every single day.
Yeah, and it's sad, but I don't know. I just don't have high hopes that anything's going to change.
Cheryl, thanks for the phone call. Let's go to Jack. You're on WGN. What did you want to say, Jack? You're on the air.
Yeah, John, I was shocked and surprised at your earlier statement. You know, what could Trump have done to solve the situation? One thing he could have done is he could have refused to sign the bill that Obama passed.
Yeah.
Terrible Obama. He passed a bill that made it very difficult for people who have emotional problems and to get a gun license. When Trump got in, you know, the House and the Senate, which are both controlled by Trump people, passed a law that did away with that. So now, I mean, you know, you could be, I don't know, resident of Dunning in the old days and get a gun license.
Well, my understanding is what the president overturned was the Obama administration rule that said if you are on Social Security because of mental health issues or can't drive because of mental health issues, then you can't get a gun license.
Well,
and that seems to make sense. Okay, let me just finish my point. So that's okay, but I mean, if that's what we're that's what we're talking about right here, Jack?
Yes.
Okay, so if you can't drive because you're not mentally stable, of course you shouldn't have a gun. And if you're on Social Security, if you're on some sort of benefit program because of your mental illness, then you shouldn't have a gun. Who wouldn't be behind that? And yet this president, only because Barack Obama did it, maybe it's a good idea, but Donald Trump is about overturning everything Obama did, even the good things Obama did. So fine, Trump throws that out. But that would not have helped in this case.
No, in this case, I don't think it would have. But, I mean, I really think they should. Every time one of these incidents occurs, the gun people always say, oh, it's the individual, it's individual. It's not the vehicle they use. And I think it would be so simple just to pass the law, because every other country, I think every civilized country, has a law somehow prohibiting AK-15s or whatever they are, or assault weapons. You know, but Colt and I don't know who else, or Remington, they're making tons of money. Obviously, they're making tons of money because they've given tons of money to various politicians.
Well, you know what we did? We posted on my Facebook page, and I don't know that everybody's on the internet or everybody's on Facebook, but we posted on my Facebook page, and it's been shared many, many times. All of the members of the Illinois Congressional Delegation who received PAC money from the NRA, how much they got and what their NRA grade is. We gave you their phone number and their website, and you and I need to talk to them. We need to say, hey, I think that's a great thing you're doing. The NRA is awesome, and you should keep doing what you're doing. Or I think we should reconsider it, and I want you to sort of disassociate yourself with the NRA and their money. Either way, you and I have a responsibility to talk to our legislators about this. And if you want that, we'll pin it back to the top of my page, Jack. I appreciate your call. We'll put that back at the top of my page and invite you to contact them. Many thousands of you, I know, are doing that. I'm WGN King John on Facebook.
Oh, say, can you see?
Fergie has apologized for this. She said, I was trying my best. I wanted to do something different. I didn't mean any disrespect. I actually liked it. And I'm so tired, I said yesterday, of people telling me how to be respectful that I was sort of in her camp. But Thomas Jefferson on President's Day yesterday joined us. We played that little clip for him and asked him what he thought about it. The third president of the United States. President Thomas Jefferson is joining us now, the third president of the United States. President Jefferson, are you there?
A good day to you, citizen.
I also just want to play for you 12 seconds of Fergie.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
What do you think of that, President Jefferson?
It makes you wish the British had won.
That was President Jefferson's thought on that. Let's go to Mary. You're on WGN. Mary, this is John Williams. What can I do for you?
Hi, John. Well, I just had about three comments about Trump and the gun issue. I think I was told somebody already mentioned what I was going to say. The first thing, about a year almost to the date that of the Parkland shooting, he signed an executive order making it easier for people with mental illnesses.
No, we just talked about that. I know.
I didn't hear that. But the second one, he made it a photo op when he went to Parkland and visited with the medical staff and posed with all of them with a smirk on his face and a thumbs up, and implying, you know, I mean, obviously he has no heart, no compassion for what he was there for. And the third thing is, back to that signing that executive order about making it easier for those with mental illness to get a gun, he's been asked, his administration's been asked repeatedly to release the photo the video of that, because every time he signs something, he holds it up and makes a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
And he won't do that. They won't do that. So, I mean, that's one of the things he could have done that might have prevented this in the first place.
Well, I think I got to go. I appreciate your call. I'm late. But, Mary, what you said about the president's thumbs-up photo ops, in fact, it was his Twitter photo for a while. I don't know if it still is. In Florida with the victims and with the staff that treated them was bizarre. And if you want evidence that Donald Trump just doesn't think or feel like normal human beings, then look at that picture. It is the weirdest thing you'll ever see. Eric Zorn wrote about it in the Chicago Tribune. If you follow Eric Zorn on social media, he very succinctly and brilliantly described that photo, and it is just bizarre.
If you can make me unsee what I just saw at the White House press briefing, I'll be all happy with that.
Here's the number to call, 888-708-888-0000. That's 708 Orland Park, 888. Now, you got to remember that row. And then 0000, as in zero pain. We can't make press briefings go away, but we can make knee pain go away. 708-888-0000. What was the part that bothered you the most, Ro?
There's stuff that is so patently false. At every press briefing in the history of White House press briefings, there's always some lie, right? There's always some spin that the White House press secretary is trying to pass on us. Never have there been stories of this consequence where the press briefer, in this case, Sarah Sanders, says things that are so provably false and yet continues to stand by them because they're trying to live in this altered universe. It's very Orwellian. It's very, very, very disconcerting. And I don't care. You could say that, you know, this is all about if you're left or right. You got to walk away from your left-right thought here and just go to what the straight-up truth is.
Yeah.
People will not remember this period fondly.
That's why, of course, Sean Spicer and Sarah Sanders will have to answer to their children and their gods someday about this. But what about just the run-of-the-mill congressmen and women? Shouldn't they begin to speak out when they say, actually, the world is different than what the White House is telling us? I mean, I wonder when their call to conscience is going to come.
I don't know. Well, I think it's a surprising thing. I think they do it because they figure they can get done what they want in their agenda with this president as long as they don't tick him off. He'll do whatever, you know, he's like a drunken, angry father is what he's like. He's inconsistent. You're never sure what you're going to get. He can fly into a rage. But if you appeal to his weaknesses, then you will get your way. And I think that's kind of where they're heading here.
All right, Rose off to a good start. Is Mr. Roper coming by later on?
He will. He is going to be here. Lourdes Duarte is going to be here to talk about a really interesting story out of O'Hare, actually, where their authorities are cracking a fentanyl ring at O'Hare.
As we speak?
As we speak. And Tom Skilling is going to be joining us. It is Tom Skilling's birthday. Not the most important birthday of the week, but a birthday nonetheless.
It's very important, and I'm glad to share this week with him.
All February birthdays are important, Ro.
And Senator Dick Durbin will be here at 4 o'clock, so 4:10.
Durbin's on your show.
Yes.
I can't get him on mine. Will you cancel him and have him come on my show?
Sure, whatever.
Thanks, Ro.
Yeah, whatever you need.
Yeah,
thank you, John.